States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open in session. God save the United States and its honorable court.
Good morning. Please be seated, ladies and gentlemen. We have six cases on the calendar this morning. Contract case from the Court of Federal Claims, two government employee cases, two patent cases, one from district court and one from the PTO, and a veterans case. The veterans case and one of the employee cases and the PTO case will be submitted on the briefs and not be argued. First case that is argued is Zafer Tahut Insat versus the United States, 2015-5083. Mr. Gdansky.
Good morning, judges. What's happening in this case is the government is attempting to cloak in the aura of sovereign immunity contractual actions. There's a government precedent, government case, that says contractors are not in business to lose money.
What's your claim here? Is it an acceleration claim?
I'm sorry?
What is your claim? Is it an acceleration claim?
Yes, we construe it as a constructive acceleration claim, a constructive change, a demand to continue performance under threat of default, and therefore under the two cases we've cited, Ali Cassie and Dougherty, which are identical. And the demand language by the contracting officers in both those cases directed the contractor to continue to perform under threat of default.
But you have to ask for a time extension before you can have an acceleration claim. And your client didn't ask for a time extension, even though he was encouraged by the government to ask for one.
He kept asking. The correspondence shows that he kept saying, we need time and money.
And he never asked for a specific amount of time, did he?
He didn't. There were other issues ongoing in the contract, so he didn't pose to say, for this one, I need 87 days because it was an ongoing event. It was closed for 210 days. It didn't know how much time to ask for. The only way you could ask for specific times is to say, give us as much time as we can factor on a projection basis for the border to be opened and the resultant logjam to move to a mainstream objective in which we can calculate when we can move the car. But it didn't repeatedly correspond and say we need time and money.
Is there anything in the regulations or anywhere else that say how you're supposed to make a request for a time? Is there a special form you're supposed to use or anything like that?
No, there isn't. I'm sure that the prudent practice would be to submit something in writing, obviously address it to someone with contracting authority, putting on notice the project engineers that the government has on site to actually supervise work, or the U.S. Customs Department, which was a side agency involved in these proceedings. There's no exact form, Your Honor, but there's replete with correspondence. The contract has a system of serial letters in which it logs in every letter submitted to the government responding to a specific government letter, and there's numerous correspondence in the file focusing on that objective.
I was just going to say, when I was looking at the papers, I noticed that a lot of those requests you're talking about really are in the form of, we're putting on notice that we're entitled to time. And as Judge Dyke pointed out, they don't say how much time. But they also don't request time. Is there a difference between saying we're entitled to time than in saying we respectfully request time?
No, there's no rigorous formula to that. There's no exact verbiage. We're not talking about a certification language requirement for a CDA claim, which has precise and exact language you must categorically use. These are common sense. As long as the intent is communicated to the government, which it was, it couldn't, as I explained, how could it? It couldn't say, give me X days. We are telling you we need time.
Well, you could say, give me X days for what's happened so far.
But that wouldn't serve any practical purpose, Your Honor, because it was an ongoing event. Let's say it took 3 months for
The government. Didn't the government ask him to submit something specific?
They asked him at the same time, kept demanding that he continue to perform. So
what was the problem with responding to the government's request that you make a specific request for additional time.
Because frequently what happens is, by analogy, or with this same contract or the same contracting agency, something occurs. There's a constructive change issue. The government says, do this work. We'll talk about your claims later. So the contractor puts the government on notice right away and says, we're going to need time. We can't negotiate time right now because we don't know how much time we're going to need, but we're telling you as a legal protection, we will need time. And the government frequently says, okay, when the situation's resolved itself, whatever the difficulty is at hand, we will come back to you and negotiate time. We're not agreeing in advance. We will give you time. Time equates to money frequently for overhead. So this is the practice the contractor followed. But remember, at the same time, there
but
were
good...
You
can't postpone it until after all the events are over with, because then the government doesn't know whether they're facing a constructive acceleration.
No, it's not an issue with the government. It was not put on notice. Didn't know a claim was coming in. The border was closed. 3 days later, a letter went in and said, the border's closed. Tell us, you, the government, tell us, what do you want us to do? Do you want us to take alternate routes, which were really non-existent? I explained the difficulties, the earthquakes, through the other minuscule route. Do you want us to airship everything? Do you want us to stop orders with our suppliers? Do you want to put that on hold? Because there were ships ready with cargo in port. There were other orders routed. These projects require massive steel, so there's long lead times. These have to be ordered well in advance of the actual day that you need them. You have to allow for shipping. So how could the contractor say, it did say, tell us what to do. Instead, the government says you are directed to continue to perform under threat.
But they also told them to file a request for an extension of time, right?
The first response back was 3 months later. And if the government had just said time, I'm sorry, if the contractor did go in and say time, the only dispute we have is it didn't specifically say I need X number of days, because for a practical reason, it couldn't do this on an incremental basis. It couldn't say, okay, the border's still closed. Closed November, here it is February the following year. So right now we need 90 days.
Look at Appendix 50. And it's a letter from the Department of the Army, and they invite him to submit a request for an extension of time. It says any request for extension of time must fully explain why the delay was unforeseeable and to include documentation, et cetera, et cetera. And he never...
What was the date of that, Your Honor?
Pardon me?
The date that you're citing the letter?
It's June 27, 2012.
So that's still prior to the border even being opened.
There's also a letter, JA-37, dated October 24th, 2012, that has similar language.
The government, the contractor was in a quandary. What do we do? You're asking us to submit time, specific time requests. What do we do with all the other procurement of supplies? We got, at this time when the board was open, there was still an 8-month logjam before goods would start moving. So what could it say to them? Okay, we predict we need another year and a half. We need another 2 years.
So if that's what they thought, that's what they should have said.
But they kept saying that. They didn't put a finite number. They didn't say, right now we can tell you we need 147 days. At the end of the 147 days, we'll come back to you and tell you we need another 130 days.
Counsel, your basic problem is that this was a firm, fixed price contract, FOB destination.
That's the same rationale used before the government adopted, before the cases adopted, the doctrine of constructive change. Yes, it's a firm fixed price contract. So what are we talking about? Something happened, we need to hold demurrage 10 days. Something happened, we're going to straighten this out. We'll resolve it 219 days. That changes the circumstances. That becomes, okay, no demurrage, but now we're telling you, keep all your plans in effect, in place, continue to order your supplies, lay out the money to your subcontractors and your vendors, and we'll consider time. But if you don't do this, we're going to default you.
One thing the court below found was that the costs that you were seeking were not the kind of costs that would result from the delay, like the claim costs from the shipping and the storage. What's your response to that?
Well, this gets into precise terms of what demurrage is. It is the cost of maintaining cargo on a vessel in harbor, which equates to that kind of cost. Because the contractor said, what should we do? We have other vessels. Most of the bulk of the goods had not yet been sent from the U.S.
How would those costs have been reduced if they had been given a time extension?
I'm sorry?
How would those costs have been reduced if they'd been given a time extension?
The contractor would have said, we're not shipping anymore, so we will not have to incur the demurrage cost just to ship it so that it gets to the port and sits there. It could have said, tell me, government, you in your logic, you tell me when you think you're making progress on your negotiations with the government of Pakistan for your own direct goods. Tell me when that possibly, the government should have said, we'll tell you when we iron out this situation. In the meantime, put a hold, do not order any more supplies. Put a stop work order in effect. It didn't say that. It said you must continue to deliver or else we're terminating you. The threat of default, particularly where the contractor is dealing with primarily the same contracting agency, the Corps of Engineers, is the most important thing it has with respect to future contract business. So the contractor's got to gauge, it's not just this one contract I've got here. I've got five other contracts with the same contracting activity. I've got others with the Navy, and I want future contracts. If the government had said, at some point in time during those 219 days, the government should have realized, we, the government, have a problem. Not just for our contractors, but for the government, remember, it was at the same time negotiating for its own goods that it was directly importing, which were also put on hold.
As I understand your request, you're seeking costs for transportation, storage, and demurrage.
Right.
Is there anything else I'm missing?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
Any questions, John?
We will save the remainder of your time for rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Ms. Kaprowski.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Agatha Kaprowski on behalf of the United States. The trial court correctly determined that Zafir did not face a constructive acceleration because, as this panel has pointed out, all of Zafir's claimed costs came from shipping and storage and not from any costs it incurred as a result of a purported order to accelerate.
Well, I'm not sure that that the cost wouldn't have been reduced if they'd gotten a time extension. The real question seems to be whether they sufficiently requested a time extension. What's the answer to Judge Stahl's question as to whether there's a regulation that tells you what you're supposed to do in order to request a time extension?
Your Honor, I would refer you to FAR 52.249-10, which is the default clause.
Is that in the record here?
Yes, it's referenced in the two letters that the panel pointed out.
But not quoted?
Pardon?
But not quoted?
Not quoted, but referenced specifically to the FAR.
What does it say?
The FAR says in subpart B that a contractor under certain terms may request an extension for delay arising from unforeseeable causes. Subparagraph B1 describes different types of events that may be unforeseeable, and subparagraph 2 requires the contractor, within 10 days from the beginning of any delay, unless extended by the contracting officer, notifies the contracting officer in writing of the causes of delay. The contracting officer shall ascertain the facts and the extent of delay. If, in the judgment of the contracting officer, the findings of fact warrant such action, the time for completing the work shall be extended. And then it mentions that the findings of the contracting officer shall be final and conclusive. If the panel refers back to those two letters on June 27th and October 24th, excuse me, the contracting officer asked Zafir, the terms of the subject contract do, in limited circumstances, permit non-compensable extensions of time for delay in completing the work that arises from unforeseeable causes beyond the control and without the fault or negligence of the contractor. See FAR 52.249-10, default fixed price construction. If you believe that you are entitled to a non-compensable extension of time to to perform the subject contract. As a result of such delays, you may submit a request to the undersigned. Any request for extension must fully explain why the delay was unforeseeable, to include documentation of the date when the materials or equipment were shipped and when the delay began at the Pakistan border.
But that seems to go beyond the requirements of the FAR provision that you just read to us.
Our understanding is that the contracting officer was asking for sufficient evidence for the contracting officer to make the findings of fact that the contracting officer needed to make under the FAR.
But the point is that the FAR provision, as you read it to us, as I recall it, seems to just require that the contractor say, we've been delayed and we need an extension.
Your Honor, I believe that the contracting officer, or excuse me, the contractor must notify the contracting officer of the causes of delay. And
They certainly did, right? The closure of the border.
For example, at page JA32 and 33, they have their letter where they say, we put you on notice of Zafer's entitlement to additional time. And then they talk about the Pakistan-Afghanistan border has been closed for almost 8 months due to a U.S. NATO firing accident. It says a lot more than that, but why isn't that enough?
Well, subparagraph B1, which I did not read in its entirety, requires that the work arises must be from unforeseeable causes beyond the control and without the fault or negligence of the contractor. So in the contracting officer's opinion, as we understand it, the contracting officer did not have sufficient facts to make a finding of fact as to whether or not these particular causes were unforeseeable and without the fault or negligence of the contractor itself. Had the contractor, had Zafer provided that information to the contracting officer, the contracting officer certainly implied in its correspondence that he would have been willing to afford Zafer additional time.
See, the problem I'm having is I don't see that the contractor failed to comply with the FAR provision, but I do see that the contractor failed to comply with the request for further information from the Department of the Army. And the question is, under those circumstances, can the contractor's claim be barred because he didn't respond to the Department of the Army request?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I followed your question. Can you repeat it one more time?
As you read the FAR provision to us, it seems to me that the contractor complied with the FAR provision, but he didn't comply with the Army's specific request in the letter to him,
mm-hmm.
Right? The question is, can his acceleration claim be barred because he failed to comply with the Army request as opposed to the FAR provision?
Our position would be that it could still be barred under that ground, but in any event, nothing in the contracting officer's letter orders Zafer to accelerate. It merely repeats their obligations, Zafer's obligations under the contract, and there is no threat of default here. Nothing in the letter threatens Zafer with default. And during this 219 delays, the site was also unavailable until the last 12 days of the delay. So certainly on June 27, 2012, the site had only become available,
yeah,
I believe.
I don't find that very convincing, because they were shipping stuff in anticipation of site availability. And I think they've made a decent argument that if they had known they had a time extension, they could have delayed starting the shipping and they wouldn't have incurred some of these storage charges. So, and this really hasn't been explored in an evidentiary hearing. It seems to me the real questions are, did they adequately request an extension? Was the extension unreasonably withheld?
Well, Your Honor, to address your first point as to Zafer's continual ordering of supplies and material during the time that the site was unavailable, Zafer did receive a time extension on that ground, which is the P4 modification. And it received a time extension of 321 days, and it received an increase in the contract price of $3.3 million.
Yeah, I don't think that does it, but I may be wrong.
Okay. But it's our position that Zafer's notice of entitlement to additional time with compensation was not the same as asking for a non-compensable time extension, which is what it was entitled to under the default clause in the contract.
Are there any cases that have been decided that say what's necessary to ask for a time extension and whether the failure to provide information required by the government means that you haven't made a sufficient time extension request?
I am not aware of any specific cases on that ground. None of them are cited by the parties in the brief. But irrespective under the five Fraser factors, Zoffer was still required to show that it was ordered to perform extra contractual work or was ordered to accelerate. There's no indication here that anything that the contracting officer said was anything other than please continue to meet your contractual obligations or ask me for a time extension. And in addition, Zoffer was required to show, and the trial court correctly determined it had not shown, it incurred any increased cost as a result of a purported order to accelerate. All of the costs that Zoffer incurred were because of shipping and storage costs that would have been incurred regardless of whether they were ordered to accelerate or not. Additionally, the trial court correctly dismissed Zoffer's claim for breach of contract because Zoffer entered into a firm fixed price contract with an FOB destination clause in which it bore the risk for any increased costs due to third-party actions, including the sovereign acts of foreign governments. And Zoffer had failed to show that any of the acts undertaken by the government, such as diplomatic negotiations with Pakistan, were undertaken in the government's contractual authority. The trial court also correctly concluded that the government did not constructively change the contract because Zoffer was not ordered to perform any extra contractual work. And the United States negotiations with Pakistan, as I mentioned, were in its contractual capacity. Finally, the trial court correctly denied Zoffer's motion to supplement the record with newspaper articles under both hearsay and parole evidence because that evidence is not appropriate to interpret the unambiguous terms of this particular contract. And unless the panel has additional questions for me, we would request that the court affirm the trial court's decision.
Thank you, Ms. Kaprowski. Mr. Zadonsky has some rebuttal time.
Yes. I'd like to focus on some of the questions you've raised to counsel and just reiterate, summarize what Zoffer did in terms of putting the government on notice of the delay that it would ensue and the extra costs and time, and how the government responded, and what Zoffer did. It didn't sit on its hands and say, oh, so, you know, and now they file a claim after the contract's over. Borders closed November. Zoffer put some on notice.
But you have specific requests from the Department of Army saying, well,
yes,
we'll entertain a time extension. Here's what we want you to do. And it seems to me pretty clear from the record that he didn't do what the Army asked him to do. The question is whether under those circumstances he has done what's necessary to make an acceleration plan.
Here's what he did do. There was maybe two requests by the government. Okay, you might...
He didn't comply with the requests, right?
I won't concede that because I'll tell you, I'll just quote from two or three pages of my brief the letters that Zoffer did submit on that specific topic. It first, in March 12, after it put the government a rating on notice, it said to the government, can you make a determination and issue a direction as to whether shipments should be redirected to an alternate route that would increase costs or continue to ship materials through the Karachi-Pakistan border? So it asked that question, and it asked for government guidance. The government waited for 3 months.
Yeah, but he didn't ask for a specific time extension.
Because he couldn't give an exact time extension, Your Honor.
Maybe, why not? I mean, so far we've been delayed for 3 weeks. Please give us a 3-week extension.
But he, you know, in practicality, we're looking at this in hindsight. So you should have gone, one way to approach it would have been the way you're intimating,
go on record on an incremental basis until the matter was resolved. Instead, what he did was he kept going back to the government every 2 or 3 months and kept saying, how should we handle this situation?
They told him, submit a specific request.
I'm saying, let's assume the factual record indicates he didn't then make a specific factual request of X number of days. He requested, continued to request time and money. The border was reopened approximately 219 days, and he submitted his claim shortly thereafter on February 22, 2013. There's nothing that harmed the government because he was not able to compile these exact costs. This happens all the time in constructive changes and these types of cases. You just don't know your time and money yet. You've got to figure out. You've got to do a a primavera critical path structure. You got to do all these things that the government requires to prove your case. You can't just go in and say, you know what, it's X days. I've been delayed 3 weeks. Does that mean I'm entitled to 3 weeks? No, the government wants engineering support and background. It's not just day for day.
They don't need the cost data to rule on a time extension request.
But even the time extension request is not quid pro quo. In other words, it's not, you were delayed 300 days, so now you are entitled to 300 days. The government has to see, was there any concurrent delay? We have to ourselves establish, should we be claiming the entire 3 days? Are there other circumstances? Does this go in tandem with other claims we might have that affect the time requests we have?
But he didn't ask for any, did he? Even if they were uncertain?
He did with his claim, Your Honor. He did with his claim, and he just, you know, these are, remember facts as they exist at that time. You've got a port closed. He's begging for instruction. Government gives him nothing. Doesn't say we anticipate reopening the port in 4 weeks, 2 weeks, be guided accordingly. Nothing for 219 days. Just give us a time extension request. For what? Ad infinitum? I think the contractor did the best he could under the circumstances. The government on notice, gave him all the facts, and with his claim, finalized a clear, concrete package that the government requests. They don't want a one-page letter saying, give us X days. I think the contractor did all he could to preserve his rights. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.